Good morning. I call the Senate Finance Committee meeting to order. Today is Tuesday, February 4th, 2020. The time is about 9:04 a.m. We are meeting in the Senate Finance Room in the State Capitol. Please silence your cell phones. This is Co-Chair Natasha von Imhoff, and I am joined today by Senator Stedman, Senator Hoffman, Senator Wilikowski, Senator Bishop, Senator Olson, and Senator Wilson is excused today. We also have President Giesel here with us as well. We have a quorum to do business. Today's agenda item is Senate Bill 104, an act relating to an appropriation limit relating to the budget responsibilities of the governor and providing for an effective date. Yesterday, we did talk about increasing the motor fuel tax. If we are going to continue to discuss revenues, Alaskans need to be assured that we're not going to bloat the state budget in response. We still absolutely need to look for savings. And I've said before, like fat marbled in a piece of meat, waste is marbled throughout the budget. There is efficiencies to find throughout the budget. It is important that we continue to hold down spending by selling unneeded state assets. We kind of talked about that yesterday when we had the Department of Transportation, consolidating real estate, and managing our vacancy rate through worker attrition. So Senate Bill 104 would put an effective spending cap in statute. So to recap, Senate Bill 104 was first presented on April 10th, 2019, so it was last spring. There were two additional hearings, one on April 29th when public testimony was taken, and then again on April 30th when the CS version K was adopted as a working document, and that's what we're going to see today is version K. I'd like to invite Ms. Carolyn Schultz to the table to go through a quick presentation to refresh the committee's memory on where we left off last year, as well as present the sectional. So Caroline, please identify yourself for the record and begin when you're ready.
Good morning, committee members. My name is Caroline Schultz. I'm staff to the committee in Senator von Imhoff's office. I'm going to walk through the bill quickly. As Senator von Imhoff already said, we have heard this version K of Senate Bill 104. You should all have a sectional in front of you in your packet. Section 1 simply deletes the reference to the statutory spending cap in the repealer section. Section 2 actually sets the cap. In Section 2A, the cap is set at $6 billion, and it establishes a growth rate based on a trailing average of the Alaska CPI. Section B lists exemptions to the spending cap, which are listed as the principal deposits to the principal of the Alaska Permanent Fund, payments required to pay debt obligations of the state, payments to fund a state disaster declared by the governor, or deposits to a savings account or fund that requires subsequent appropriation. C specifies that appropriations for the capital budget may be excluded from the cap as long as they are 5% of the total value of the cap, which currently would be around $300 million. Subsection D is just definitions. Section 3 requires the governor submit reports ensuring that the budget proposals are under the cap. Section 4 repeals the existing statutory spending cap. Section 5 is the applicability section, and Section 6 is for transitions, and Section 7 is the effective date.
And you have a PowerPoint as well. Is there any questions regarding the sectional at this time? Okay, so let's go through the couple slides in the PowerPoint, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Last year we discussed that there were four areas of discussion with regards to the spending cap: the starting point, the growth rate, what is included, and what is excluded. And through our discussions during last session, through our three meetings, we established a good starting point would be $6 billion. The growth rate would be based on a five-year trailing average of the Consumer Price Index produced by the Bureau of Labor Statistics for urban Alaska. We included under the cap all UGF spending with some specific exemptions, but including the permanent fund dividend. And we excluded from the cap appropriations to the permanent fund principal, payments to state debt obligations, disasters, transfers that require further appropriation, and spending on capital appropriations within a set prescribed amount based on a formula, which is 5% of the total spending cap.
So we're going to pause here on this slide and just kind of have a conversation. And so last year, if you recall, the initial starting point that when the first bill was dropped was about 5.25. And there was a lot of discussion around this table, and it was amended in the CS to increase to $6 billion. And I think it's important to understand that the spending cap to $6 billion is not necessarily a spending goal. And the spending cap is also not meant to be punitive. So $6 billion was kind of looking at what our current spending was going to be. What the starting point is we have to draw a line in the sand and have it start to begin with the CPI growth rate after that. The purpose of this cap is to essentially constrain spending when we have higher than expected revenue. Right now, it looks like we're pretty steady with the permanent fund and oil. But there are years, and we'll see a graph here, when we have extreme jumps in revenue. What we want to be able to do is prevent big extreme jumps in spending during those years. We want to save revenue during those years. And then so in the down years, like we've received or experienced the last few years, this is when you were able to borrow from the CBR, if you will. The FY20 budget that we're in right now, including the projected supplemental and the $1,600 dividend that we just paid, is estimated to be about $5.7 billion. So our total spending is under the cap, as well as technically what would be applied towards the cap was only about $5.5 billion because certain debt payments are not included. So you can see where the $6 billion is, again, it's not a spending goal. It's just something to allow us to keep us constrained in large jumps of revenue. Is there any questions or comments on that point? Senator Bishop, followed by Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you for the walk through the overview to point. So to your question, for me, you know, we have a large repayment to the CBR, and I just don't see us having a big windfall anytime soon. So any overages, as the Constitution says, we'll be paying back the CBR. So it's a good first step here, what we got going.
And of course, any payments to the savings accounts, whether it be the CBR or the ERA, are not included under the cap. Those are unlimited. Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A couple points. Number one is just the thought process on including population change. I know in Anchorage, it's tied, their cap is tied to population change. I think a lot of states have theirs tied to population change. Have you given any thought to the rationale for not including that?
Yes. So very good question. That's the next point is, what's the growth rate? And the growth rate we looked at is the five-year trailing average CPI. That was one of the growth rates that the governor's bill last year had included. When I looked at the states that have spending caps or tax and expenditure limits, some included just CPI, some included just population, and some included a blend of the two. Most states that have population included have some type of statewide tax, whether it be a sales tax or an income tax. So as the population goes up and down, the tax paid goes up and down. So it's directly related to the population. We don't have that at this time. So a population go up and down, and it's irrelevant to how well the POMV does with the permanent fund or oil revenue coming up and down. So CPI, and you'll see a couple graphs here from now, shows a slow and steady rate at this point and allows for a slow growth. And there are some states that just do the CPI as well. So that's what we chose at this point because it works for Alaska. Senator Wilikowski.
Different point. And I think in prior versions, it excluded from the appropriation limit the payment of permanent fund dividends. And in this one, it excludes appropriations to the principal of the permanent fund, but not dividends. And I'm a little concerned that we continue this. As long as we don't have the PFD in the Constitution, we're we'll continue to have this fight between what the dividend should be and how much should be available for government. And I'm just curious about why the rationale for taking the payment to the dividend out.
It was a choice, and I think that we have to look at all of our spending obligations. There has been some discussion about changing the formula for the permanent fund dividend. The Supreme Court ruling, as you're very familiar with, the dividend is now, in essence, the 18th agency. And if we're going to put agency spending under the cap, then the 18th agency should also be included. I think that having fiscal discipline requires managing all of the obligations. And the state cannot overextend during years when we have additional revenues. I just don't think we need to have a shell game anymore. If it's agency spending or the dividend, it's all under the cap, period. We have to look at all of our spending. So if we have one or the other, I just feel like we just play this big whack-a-mole game. Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I got a couple of points. I'm a little concerned not having population in there. Also, the issue of the trailing CPI. So in effect, what we're having here is a trailing average for smoothing in constant dollars. So we would be freezing the purchasing power at whatever base rate we're using, 5.5 billion or what have you. Even though it would appear that in nominal dollars it's growing, in real dollars it will be flat. And my understanding of the CPI index, consumer price index, mechanics is heavily weighted to housing, which means we'd be heavily weighted to the Anchorage housing market. I don't know if that's good or bad, but Anchorage is dissimilar economically to a lot of other areas around the state, so we just need to factor that in. The dividend, I have a little different view on the dividend. The dividend, eventually, hopefully, at this table and in the legislature and with the public, we will all conclude from a policy perspective what percent of market value or the overall payout per year goes to the dividend. I think that should be unrelated, and if it grows because of the financial markets and economic expansion around the world and the permanent fund grows, that should be shared with the public. And if it gets retarded because we have collapsing financial markets or long periods of economic constraint around the world, the dividend will slow down or decrease, and it is what it is. Set that payout, and in good times, the check's bigger, and when times aren't so good, it's not larger. Embedding the dividend within the spending cap, I think, is in my opinion, a destabilizer in the overall objective. So it may appear on the surface that we actually have some kind of a trailing five-year average growth rate. In reality, it's freezing spending at the local purchasing power today. So I'm a little bit concerned about that. And then I'd like to, Madam Chairman, put the counter view on the table, because we've had this discussion numerous years within the legislature and at this table with different members here over time. But some of us, including myself, feel that the best way to control spending is through controlling the cash flow to the state. And as long as cash flow swells, there is all kinds of needs that come into the agencies, and the agencies put forth budgets to the governor at the time, some of them staggering in annual changes. I think under two governors ago, some of the agencies were bringing in 15% annual changes in a year, and he pulled them back. And then put it in his proposed budget, and we dealt with it here. So the spending pressure, I believe, doesn't solely reside within the legislature. It comes out of our agencies. So although we are the appropriators, that's just the mechanics of how the system works. And again, if we want to control spending at the municipal level or at the state level, or frankly at the federal level, it's through controlling the cash flow. And behind me on the wall is a check that this committee was instrumental in putting forward in the contribution to the principal portion, non-spendable portion of the permanent fund, that $4.9 billion sitting behind me on the wall. And I think that's the proper course to pursue, Madam Chairman, to make sure there isn't excess liquidity laying around and to ensure that all members, no matter who they are in the legislature, don't take the easy way out and just spend their earnings reserve. So I'm a little cautious on a prescriptive plan for spending, and much more comfortable with the approach of taking on the issue through controlling cash flow, because if you don't have the cash, you can't spend it. It's that simple. And we need to be cognizant of that. So there's just a couple of preliminary comments on the proposal.
So I think, thank you, Senator Stedman. If you could just go forward one slide, and we'll show a picture now of kind of what our history has looked like and what we're trying to prevent moving into the future. What you'll see here is from 1982 to an estimate of 2032, and revenues in green and spendings in orange. So you can see between 2006 and 2017, if you will, revenue went up really high, and then revenue took a nosedive. Spending in the orange went up pretty high and then is going down quite a bit, but we've also cushioned it, to Senator Stedman's point, using the CBR money. Had we kept, now the you see the gray line up top, see kind of the gray line? That's the constitutional spending cap that we have now. It has both CPI and population at 100% for the growth rate. The growth rate is very, very high. The royal blue line, if you will, is the recalculated spending cap using just CPI. During that part where the revenues and the expenses went really high, the peaks there, had we kept to a spending cap, we would have saved a great deal of more money during those high revenue years, and we would have spent a great deal less during those revenue years as well and subsequent. So we would probably have $10 to $15 billion more in the CBR right now had we had a more effectual spending cap during that period of time that looks like an M. Going forward, will we ever have a situation where we have the green M again? I don't know. The permanent fund dividend, the permanent fund is pretty steady Eddie with a constant market growth and then a 5% draw on it each year. It's pretty steady. It showed, I think when Ms. Angela Waddell was here, I think she said something, it's going to be about 80 million or projected to be 80 million in about a decade. Oil revenue, that's where the big differences come in. Will we ever see that again? I don't know. But if we do, what do we do in that situation? That's the big question. Do we put it in savings? Do we deal with deferred maintenance? Do we bloat the capital budget? Do we meet the needs of the different 17 agencies that come here and ask for their want list? Do we pay it out in a huge dividend? Do we do all of the above? From what I can tell, there has been some discussion over the years about maintaining disciplined, particularly in our agency spending, and then to Senator Bishop's point, to reimburse the CBR. I think that's the purpose of the spending cap. It's not punitive. It is just merely keeping a lid on growth in the event of high revenue years. That could happen with oil. So we can continue the discussion about what's under the cap and what's excluded from the cap. We can talk about different philosophies. We can put a sunset on this, 5 years. Revisit it then. Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I think, you know, the chart appears pretty busy. It'd be nice to, when we bring this back, to pop a lot of that stuff off of there and concentrate on the operating budget, the operating numbers. We have agency up there, excluding dividends, and then capital budget. The capital budget swung total spending quite a bit, but our real underlying challenge is the operating budget and how do we handle that. Clearly, when we had those larger capital budgets, we had a lot of pent-up deferred maintenance for the first several years, and we're now building up deferred maintenance again, because we've had flat capital budgets or minimal capital budgets for several years. So I think keeping our eye, our eagle eye on the growth of the operations is clearly on point, and that's the area where, that we have the most challenge.
It is a busy slide. The two different oranges, that is correct, one with the permanent fund dividend, one without the dividend. Or all UGF spending, actually, is the large orange. And to me, I think that's the story. It's the decisions that we make that have put us in the painful hangover that we're experiencing the last few years. I think all UGF spending, heck, DGF plus UGF spending. If I had my way, I'd put DGF, UGF, and other state spending in this thing. So we don't start playing these additional shell games. Oh, we're just gonna put a bunch of DGF in, and don't look over here. Look over here, not over here. Senator Stedman.
Put a finer point on that for the public watching at home. We've had a challenge in the past with reclassification of funds. And that enabled a appearance of less growth in the general fund spending, and sometimes actually reductions in general fund spending, which in reality did not take place. We had year-on-year budget growth, and we had governor after governor talking about reduced budgets, and every year it was going up, 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 up. And I think that's the point you're trying to make, Madam Chairman, is that that doesn't happen again. And we in the legislature went forward with a process to reclassify and restate the actual spending so the legislature can get an accurate view and the public can understand at least the direction, the magnitude of the direction of the budget, so they don't think the budget's going down when it's going up. And if it's going up or down, at what magnitude? That started to creep in again a few years ago, and now we're ringing it out again. And I think we need to have continual vigilance on that issue with whoever sits in these chairs after we're gone.
So thank you, Senator Stedman. I concur. If you recall, this committee saw the bill last year on marijuana revenue, and we parceled out some of that revenue to recidivism efforts, to I think anti-drug efforts, the irony, as well as, I believe it was after-school programs. God bless you, Senator Bishop. After-school programs. So there was even designating funds for our marijuana revenue, and we're talking just a few million here. So that is already happening, and only I think a quarter of the marijuana revenue, tax revenue, goes to the general fund at this point. Much of it is designated. And I think that was the point that you're trying to make as well. So I'm a full believer and supporter of a spending cap. I believe it will instill guidance for the future people that are sitting in these chairs. It will help us replenish our CBR.
our constitutional budget reserve. I think it will give us the discipline that we need to continue to look for efficiencies in our agency spending, and it will keep a lid on large jumps of overall undesignated general fund spending in times of plentiful. Just to reiterate, if you want to go to the next slide, please. Oh, Senator Bishop has a question.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. As we work, this is a committee bill for everyone at home, and I'm a little rusty, but I want to section two, Ms. Schultz, see this additional 5% above the limit to be spent on capital projects, and we talked, Senator Stedman was talking about the deferred maintenance and et cetera, et cetera. I can't remember if we modeled this and on this deferred maintenance schedule that we have of the $2 billion and is the 5%, did we land on that? Did we take that into consideration when we landed on that 5%?
So we came up with this last year. It was last April or so. And it is about $300 million at the 5%. And the feedback that we got, first of all, there's already kind of a capital limit in the current constitution, albeit it's much higher. But the feedback that we were receiving was we wanted to increase the ability to invest in capital when times were good, but not to make it to the point where it's so big that we can't keep up. We don't have enough workforce. We don't have enough construction companies to actually keep up with the demand. So there was a sweet spot, if you will, discussed about for this particular state with this size, with the construction projects, that a $300 million would allow us the headroom needed to address the deferred maintenance, the capital needs that the state needs with this particular population and the workforce that we have over time. It also gives us just a slight bit of headroom to do geo bonds if we wanted to leverage it up even more. So that was what we came up last spring.
Thank you.
So this next slide right here, the far left is fiscal year 2020 with likely supplementals. And it's sort of giving you, giving the committee a framework of where we are right now. You see our total UGF revenue is about just a little shy of $5.1 billion. Our total operating and capital is about $4.6 billion. That's line I. We had a $1,600 check. It did cost the state a little over $1 billion to pay that out. So total budget with the PFD is about 5.7. That did yield us, just a reminder, about a $647 million deficit. That was a draw on the CBR. If we were going to look at the cap, which is $6 billion, if we set it up for this year, just to kind of have a framework. We have some spending outside the cap, which is debt. The spending subject to the cap is $5.4 billion, therefore. So we are under the cap of about $550 million, $546 million to be exact. As the cap moves over time, it begins to of course, we're in fiscal year 2021, or we will be starting this in fiscal year 2021. You can see that it begins to grow. Line N is in Natasha. You can see how it grows slightly over time with the five-year trailing CPI. And you can see how we're under or over the cap with these different budgets and expected projected revenues based on the Department of Revenue forecast. So we will have quite a bit of headroom. If revenues come in, we can do with it as we will. But what this will provide us is, again, it's not punitive. It's just a guidance in the large revenue years. Senator Stedman.
Thank you. Just for clarity, for those watching at home, that we haven't made a policy decision here in the legislature on the upcoming dividend appropriation. So I think in FY20 on the screen, it's showing $1,600 dividend check and potentially this next year, $1,153. That's just a placeholder. Again, we haven't had that policy discussion.
That is correct.
That is yet to be decided. So I just don't want the public to draw any conclusions or any member at the table here drawing any conclusions. This is just for visual digestion of potential impacts of the proposed spending cap, and those decisions will on the dividend will come in the future.
Thank you, Senator Sedman. You're absolutely right. On line J, $773 million is roughly an $1,100 dividend. For calculation, every approximately $25 million spent is an additional $500 to your dividend check. So we would, so looking at line M for the different deficits, if we spent more on the dividend, those deficits for another $500, those deficits would go up about another $325 million. Or if we change the spending elsewhere, a lower capital budget, significantly lower savings, or statewide operations. So yes, J, line J is a placeholder. Senator Sedman.
The other thing I'd like to mention, just you know, for the committee members to consider, when we had substantial revenue inflows several years ago, at this table we had robust capital budgets to catch up on deferred maintenance and also build some infrastructure that was needed around the state. There was a discussion at the time to use bonded indebtedness and go forward with some bond packages, which the legislature decided to do a couple of times, rather than pay cash for those projects. The reason I want to bring this up is under this proposal, the bond indebtedness would be outside the cap. The other concern I think we need to consider on this bill is the likelihood, high likelihood in my opinion, extremely high likelihood, that the legislature would just add debt, bonded debt for capital projects to get around the spending limit. And we've had that discussion at this table before and in private, where some of our colleagues feel that the public doesn't see that in the budget documents when they're presented to them. They see operating and capital spending. They don't see the, you know, the bond package. And the bond package then comes, once it's issued, comes with debt service for 20 plus years. That is a concern, and it gets back to the potential games, budget games, Madam Chairman, that you had mentioned earlier, that we need to be very cognizant of, that we don't set that up.
So you are correct. If you recall, when we had Devin Mitchell here before, I believe it was even last year, when he had talked about, and even this year, how much headroom we have for bonding, and it wasn't much. But the issue is it's not just the capacity for bonding, but it's the payment schedule, whether we have excess cash to pay those bonds back and that additional debt. To your point, we certainly don't want to utilize our capacity and then some, and then not have the cash flow available to pay the debt. And that is one of the reasons why it is important to look at all spending, including the dividend. And the question that I asked Mr. Mitchell last year was, if we go to our capacity in bond debt, yet we utilize our spending, our revenues that would normally to go pay back those bonds, and we're paying them out in a dividend, what would the rating agencies look at it? And he says it would be challenging. It would be a difficult calculation to look at our rating. It would potentially put a negative rating on the state of Alaska. So it is important, again, to look at all spending, including debt. Maybe it makes sense to put debt underneath the cap. That's a good argument. But if we put it underneath the cap, and then to your point earlier, the permanent fund dividend is outside the cap, and we are tempted to pay a big, ever bigger dividend each year, where will the revenue go to pay back that additional debt? Or again, are we trading, and it's just, I'm kind of going on a tangent, are we trading, what's the opportunity gain of a dividend versus capital and deferred maintenance? Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you. The Devin Mitchell and the state has classified some of our debt as subject to appropriation debt. For example, the oil tax credits, HB 331, they consider them to be subject to appropriation debt. Is it the intent to include those sort of things under debt obligations such that they would be excluded from the appropriation limit?
That's a very first statement. We have the headroom now to probably pay the statutory payment if we needed to. I think we would certainly have more headroom if the Supreme Court comes out, or I can't remember what level of court is looking at the constitutionality of having a bond set up to pay off these debts. And if that's the case, then the payment will even be less. And then if this body, along with the body next door, decides to follow perhaps Governor Walker's lead, I think a couple years ago, by having discounts on even some of that debt paid, then those payments will be reduced even further. So under this scenario, we do have the headroom for any one of those scenarios at this point. But we're just sort of waiting for the court case to kind of go through. Carolyn Schultz, you have a comment?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Senator Wilikowski, to add a finer point on the chairwoman's comment, as you can see in subsection D of section 2, debt obligation does not include state pension liability or appropriation for school bond debt reimbursement. The intent by including debt as an exception was in order to reassure any possible buyers of state debt that there wasn't going to be something that's hamstringing the state's ability to repay that state debt. So your question about subject to appropriation debt, there are some things that we include in the debt category when we're looking at a simple fiscal summary, for example, that would not be excluded from the cap. This was written with the intent of having a narrow definition of state debt, typically, which means general obligation bond debt and some other kinds of state bond debt.
On that, do you know how much subject to appropriation debt the state has and how much we're appropriating per year for that?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, in the fiscal year 20 budget, there is a roughly $90 million in state debt in the budget. That includes general obligation debt payments and other similar bond payments. Then there was also the appropriation for the 50% school bond debt reimbursement, which is included in the fiscal year 20 budget following the governor's veto of half of that payment. And then there's also, of course, the roughly $300 million payment to the retirement obligation, and that's not included as debt in the definition here in this bill.
So I didn't have plans to move the bill out today unless there's another sentiment. What we can do is set this aside, and if folks, committee members, want to get back with me and my staff with ideas, recommendations, suggestions, thoughts, you name it, I'd like to bring this up again probably in 10 days, 2 weeks. So that's sort of the rough time frame. Any further questions, any comments? Ms. Schultz, any questions at all? Anyone at all? Okay. So that concludes today's meeting. Tomorrow there will be a subcommittee of the whole on the university. I believe that Senator Hoffman will be leading that in the hot seat. So I'll be switching places with the good senator from Bethel. And that is at 9 a.m. So with that,